You are listening to the ForceCom Frontline, bringing you to our soldiers on the front lines of readiness.
Hey everyone, welcome to the ForceCom Frontline. I'm Ashley and I'm your host. Also with me is Miss Jeannie D'Amico, and she is a new member of our ForceCom Public Affairs team. I decided to bring her in on this one. What's the saying? Like something about fire. Do you know what it is? Trial by fire?
Yes, trial by
something
fire.
Something like that. So
shooting the fire hose at me.
Yes, that yeah. We are doing. So yes. We're getting her acclimated to all things ForceCom Public Affairs. And so I invited her to do this episode with me. So thank you, Jeannie.
You're very welcome. Happy to be here.
And so also with us is a Fort Bliss soldier who is known as the Bone Marrow Guy, Specialist Christian Sutton. And he has registered thousands of soldiers for a bone marrow donation registry. And he's here to talk to us about how he got started with this and where his passion from this program stems from. So welcome, Specialist Sutton, and thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely. So just to start, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how long you've been in the Army, MOS, you know, that sort of stuff?
I'm from Sumter, South Carolina. I've been in the Army for, I think, 3.5 years, and I'm a 25 SIERA satellite communications systems operator maintainer.
So nothing nothing to do with the medical side, to any. So we talked about your MOS, and you're from Sumter, South Carolina, which is not too mm-hmm. far from us. I think I told you previously that I'm aware of Sumter because of working in Fort Jackson, and we used to have the JROTC groups come mm-hmm. on down. So going into this program, tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
So I am working with a team of volunteer soldiers across the Army. I'm working with command teams at Echelon, from brigade, divisions, to commands, to HQDA, to kind of modernize and rebuild the Army's bone marrow donor registry program, or really build it from the ground up in order to get more people on the National Bone Marrow Registry, in order to give cancer patients more chances for finding a donor.
Okay. Now you said build it from the ground up. So are you saying that the Army currently doesn't have a bone marrow donor program?
So the DoD has a bone marrow donor registry program, but it's very volunteer based.
Okay.
And the Army has absolutely no like actual structured program for getting people onto the registry or offering the information and the opportunity to register to soldiers on a regular basis.
That's fascinating.
Right?
Considering we have all, you always see like the blood donations, like give blood. I've been mm-hmm. giving blood through the military for years. They like bring out the things. So I find it fascinating that we don't really have something already established like this within the DoD and within the military. Yeah. So this is amazing.
So let's talk about how did this start? How did you decide to bring this to Fort Bliss and more so the Army?
Well, the same as all the volunteers who've done these drives for Salute to Life, which is a DoD Marrow Registry program for the last 30 years, is just I reached out to Salute to Life, and I got more information to do those on how to do those drives, and I just went and pitched it to my commander, and then he pitched it to my brigade surgeon, and I started doing drives with my brigade, and then realized, oh, I can just do this on my own. So I just started sneaking into work during lunch, going to different battalions and knocking on the sergeant major's door and just convincing them to let me come out to their battalion that week or during a PT formation and do a registry drive. And through doing those, I ended up doing drives with like almost every battalion on Fort Bliss my first year. And then I started helping other soldiers do it. And then just kind of realized that this is not sustainable. It's just not going to continue on after we stop or I stop. I was the first person to do it on Fort Bliss in 10 years. And when I stopped, probably another 10. So I started looking toward how do I make this kind of enduring.
All right. Now, was there like something that happened in your personal life that was the inspiration for doing bone marrow donor things? Because it's not something you hear every day. So it mm-hmm. kind of makes you wonder if like, was there something that happened in your personal life that inspired you to do this? Was there an incident that like spurred this on and why you've pushed it so hard? Like what, I just want to know, like, what is your inspiration for doing something?
Well, I started my military career literally. I got out of AIT, and then 2 weeks after that, the U.S. pulled out of Afghanistan. So my first year in the real army was working with the Afghan refugees and doing something that, like, really felt real and tangible, and like it was making a difference. And I loved the work. And then I went to a punk rock concert right towards the tail end of that detail, and I hate punk rock. Just kidding, but it's awful. And so I didn't pay attention to the show necessarily, but I did notice this table that was registering people to be bone marrow donors called, from this organization, Punk Rock Saves Lives. And it was like 10 feet away from a mosh pit. And I figured if it's easy enough to do it here in this, you know, very sanitary place with a bunch of drunk people flailing around, it's probably almost the same registered people in the army. So I put that idea in my pocket and then reached out to that organization a couple months later.
All right. And so what drives you to continue to do it and to get more soldiers registered?
I think as far as getting more soldiers registered is just, it's really the impact you have when you, I've actually finally gotten the notice that one of my drives actually found a donor. A donation happened, which doesn't happen very often. Very few people who register ever end up getting the call to donate to a cancer patient. And that finally happened for my first drive. So getting more people on the registry when I do my drives is a big motivation. And then for continuing to push and do this, get involved in this Army politics to create this enduring program Army-wide is just, you know, continuously finding opportunities. I figured out that I have this chance to make this big difference. And if I don't keep chasing it and growing to meet every new challenge, and like I'm so far to my depth, but but I'm just figuring out as I go. It's just, why waste the opportunity? It will never come again.
You know, you say you're so far out of your depth, but I mean, you said 3 years in the Army, and I feel like you have in that short amount of time made a huge impact. And you're not just making that impact at Fort Bliss, but across the Army. And you've spoken to senior leaders from across the Army. You went to AUSA last year and spoke with senior leaders. So, I mean, while you're out of maybe your comfort zone, I feel like you're doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's figuring things out with your forehead. And I'm figuring out my forehead can handle a lot of, you know, hits as I just kind of throw myself in a situation to adjust. And I also have leadership at 1AD with the CSM and the CG and the surgeon cell and PAO team, as well as my team that are at different bases across the Army that are really supportive and letting me both just challenge myself, throw myself into these situations and figure it out on the fly, as well as letting me fail and figure things out in that way. And it's just been a fun effort of figuring out how to survive in this environment just by getting out of my comfort zone over and over and over, and then kind of just being okay with failing. I just don't mind it. And I'm fortunate that I have leadership that lets me fail when I need to.
Have you ever like done a project like this? Maybe not bone marrow registry, but like when you were in high school, become passionate about something and pushed for something, or is this like brand new territory?
In college I started doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and that was like the first thing I ever had that gave me meaning, and I destroyed my body. I hope that picked up on the mic, but doing that 7 days a week every day, like working just to get enough money to pay for tuition and a little bit of food and gas to get to class. And then when I got to AIT, I did 2 AITs. I failed out of EOD school originally, but I started doing a PT program in EOD school. Every Saturday, I'd make them go do something that sucked at 7 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock in the morning. And then when I got to Fort Gordon, I did the same thing and started working with the commander to improve BH. And those are just like little projects I did with my friends.
That's amazing.
And then when the refugees came, the minute I heard they were coming, I told my first sergeant, like, I don't give a heck if I'm killing sandbags. I want to be on that detail. And I started calling businesses around El Paso and like getting donations, like prayer rugs, yoga mats from yoga studios, which if it's a sanitary surface, it can be a prayer rug, calling daycares and getting diapers and stuff like that. baby clothes, toys.
You've like given me goosebumps. Yeah. Like, that's amazing.
And none of this has anything to do with your MOS. Like, all of these things, like, none of it has anything to do with your MOS. So my question is, are you going to stick with the satellite stuff, or would you like to switch MOSs to something in the medical field or something along those lines? Or are you happy with where you're at?
I don't mind being signal. I'm not very good at it. I haven't had very much practice at all. I've kind of just been sidetracked the entire time with different projects or things like that. I'm good with some things, but I think it's just as long as I'm doing things to help soldiers, to help people, that's what I found out really gets me going more than, you know, RJ45 cables and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know that there's an MOS that says, you know, help soldiers, but if there was, I feel like that would be right up your alley.
Well, are you involved with BOSS, with Better Opportunity for Single Soldiers?
I am. I used to be on the executive council for Fort Bliss.
Okay, of course you were.
Of course you were.
And I'm working with the Fort Liberty BOSS president and BOSS team to integrate these drives into the BOSS program, kind of build a model and test shop it and figure out how to make it work before we start moving into other bases or pitch it to regional BOSS.
So let's talk about that a little bit more. So you have expanded this program to not just be at Fort Bliss, and it's called Operation Ring the Bell. Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So can you just talk about how you've done that, what is happening, and just talk about that program?
So originally it was just me running around Fort Bliss, walking into, you know, offices, convincing them, so often making up a title like, oh, I'm Special Sutton, I run the Fort Bliss bone marrow program. So they kind of thought, without me saying, they kind of thought someone else sent me, so they'd listen to me. And I did run the Fort Bliss bone marrow program because I was the only one, even though I had
You're
no
lying.
It was, you know, and barring there being zero for 10 years, some random dude doing it at lunch is probably, you know, good enough. I was able to get General Eisenhower to, like, I just convinced him to, like, he was giving me an Argon, and I was like, yeah, here's a binder that I built this morning, a continuity book for how to do a base flight program permanently. And I was expecting him to just go away from me. He just went, absolutely, yeah, let's do it. So then I started building this team up of soldiers who reached out to me from social media to start doing these drives with their unit. And once the door was open for doing it with the division, or my division, which was such a crazy accomplishment, like I cried for like a day once I finally got the news. The doors were open. I started getting my team to start doing drives and open door policy to the division leadership and making that same pitch. And then we went to AUSA and we harassed the entire chain of command of the Army over 3 days. And we were able to get a lot of support. I started kind of facilitating my own PAO coverage or media coverage through my social media account and leading my PAO team and division. They've been great in letting me just kind of chase after it.
Yeah.
And now it's just finding exactly how to integrate into the Army. There's never one plan. A division program or the division runs it may not be the way. So I want it to happen. It's going to be the way it's going to. So there's not very many avenues I'm not sticking my little fingers into.
So where all do you have soldiers helping with this program?
Give me 1 second. Pull up those. It's a little long. Fort Bliss, Fort Cavazos, Fort Riley, Fort Huachuca, JBLM, Fort Gordon, Fort Stewart, Fort Liberty, or West Point, Hawaii Joint Command, the National Guard Bureau, at G9, I have a little bit of help, Fort Sam Houston now, and SHAPE in Brussels, in Belgium.
You are international now.
You are absolutely international. I was going to say, that's a widespread, like, across the United States, and then you said SHAPE, and I was like, oh my gosh, Belgium? Really? Right. Oh, that's amazing.
It is amazing.
I have people who reach out to me, and my position with my team is just whatever they want to do, I'm there to just enable them. So if they, doesn't matter how busy I am, if they need, like, something made, like some kind of presentation or advice or anything, they can call me anytime, and I'll sit down and I'll put it together with them. and help them get better at doing this. So I'm just an enabler for them. They're killing it out where they're at.
Yeah, but what's that feel like to have put this on the radar for so many people? I mean, it's not something that you hear a lot of people talk about very often, but everybody is impacted by cancer. And it's something that everybody can be affected by. So to have so many people talking about this now and coming to you for advice and leadership and how to get their program started, how does that feel?
I'm really like humbled by the opportunity and the scale of it, and just how kind of overwhelming that is. And as far as thinking about the pressure or the scale or the importance of it, I try and pretend that doesn't exist. Otherwise, I'll just, like, you know, fish eye stare at the ceiling. I just focus on continuing on with what's the next thing I need to do, what's the next task, what's the next meeting, what's the next opportunity, and what does my team need. I don't worry so much about the big picture or my place in it. I just worry about what I need to do personally to help you get there.
Keep trucking on.
I'll smell the roses some other day.
So, to date, do you know how far or how many people you and the program itself has registered to be bone marrow donors? Can you share that? I'm curious.
4,082.
Wait, personally? How many?
4,082.
4,082 personally. Wow. And my team altogether has registered 6,200, I believe, on a guess. We just did we have some drives happening at West Point right now.
That's awesome. So let's talk about the process of bone marrow registry. What does one do?
Do you register as a bone marrow donor? One second. I have a picture.
I can say I did it a long time ago, and it's funny because you were talking about this, and I started having memories back to about 22 years ago. It was right after I had my son, and I think I was in college, and I had done blood donation, and they asked if I wanted to be a bone marrow donor, and I was like, sure, why not, you know? And I just said yes. Oh. You know, I'm 20 years old, 21 years old, something like that. And my son was born 22 years ago. And I got a call to be a bone marrow donor, and I couldn't do it because I had just had a child. And
So you couldn't even be swabbed?
I couldn't even be swabbed. I couldn't do anything because I was literally like 4 weeks postpartum. Huh. And because of that, they were like, yeah, you're not. And I never heard anything again until today when we're talking about bone marrow registry. And it kind of clicked. And I'm like sitting here thinking as we're talking, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I registered for that, you know, 20 something years ago. Mm-hmm. So how do I get back on that list? That's what I want to know, because I haven't received a call. Of course, I've lived all around the world since then. But, you know,
if you've fully like completed the registration process before, you never need to do it again.
Okay.
It's kind of a one and done, but you can go to the Be the Match website and update your contact information so they can find you if you ever are a match.
Okay.
Because that's something someone's waiting for your donation. But for registering, people can just go to bethematch.com or salutetolife.org and just say they want to register, and they'll mail you a kit. It's like 10 seconds of cheek swabbing, a bit of paperwork, and that's it. Email it right back. And, to your charge.
And then what? So I'm going to ask Jeannie a question. Okay. How do you donate bone marrow? I was schooled on this.
You know, I'm not 100% sure, because when they called me and asked me if I wanted to donate bone marrow, again, I was like 20 donating blood, and they were like, do you want to donate? I was like, sure, I'll do that stuff. And we did all the things, and I got the call, and they said, because it was an intense procedure, of course, this was 22 years ago, and I don't really remember, honestly.
Well, it's not the way I thought it was. It's not through your back. I'll let specialists sit and tell us.
Like, I feel like there's syringes involved.
Maybe. So there's people think it's a spinal tap. It's not. It never will be. Spinal taps are for very different medical procedures. It doesn't happen with bone marrow donation. But for bone marrow donation now, a lot of people think you're going to get, you know, someone's going to come in and stab your bones, pull some stuff out of them. That almost never happens anymore. It's through your blood. It's called PBSC. And you take a pill and it sheds your bone marrow stem cells into your bloodstream over like a day. And then you spend a couple hours just like donating plasma, two needles, two arms, sitting in a hospital bed watching Grey's Anatomy. And a couple hours later, you've done the exact same process as getting stabbed in your hip. The only time you'll ever donate, that's 90% of the time. But the only, that 10% where you'd actually have to get that direct extraction from your hip only happens if it's a high-risk infant. Almost no one will ever do it. And if they do it, it's because it's really necessary. Wow. Just to save a baby.
Right?
That's such a, it's such a simple process.
Right. I thought it was a lot more intense than that. And I would argue that a lot of people probably think it's a lot more intense. What's your experience been with that? Do people ask you? I'm sure they do.
About the process?
Like, yeah. What do most people think happens?
Spinal tap. They get stabbed and they point at a random bone in their body. I don't know. They think they're going to register, and then like a week later, the van's going to pull up and they have to go donate. Most people will never donate in their entire life. They'll be on the registry, and it's a 1 in 430 chance that you'll ever get a call to be a preliminary match. And that doesn't even mean you'll actually donate, because the occasion that you specifically would need to donate is really rare, because you have to be a near genetic identical twin to the person who has cancer, needs a bone marrow donation. But those cancer patients are the ones who are also really hoping to find that donor. And the only chance they have is if there's more people on the registry.
It's like I said before, we all know somebody who has had cancer.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I know somebody that I went to high school with who had a form of leukemia, and my entire social media blew up with Be the Match stuff. Everybody registering to see if they could be the match for her. And she did end up finding a match, but unfortunately she still ended up passing away. But she got some of her life extended. She had a little bit more time than maybe she would have. So I do think what you're doing is incredible and affects so many people.
Yeah, I mean, if sometimes when people get donations, it's not enough, yeah, and they still pass, or they need another donation and they can't find the right one, or the body rejects it. But no matter what, if someone donates, it's directly giving, extending or giving someone's life back.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I'm just curious. Do you know how many people are registered on BeTheMatch.org, like in total?
I think maybe around 15 million or something like that. It's 6% of the population in the United States. It's okay. On the registry.
Oh, in Germany, like nothing.
It's yeah, that's why I was thinking like, that's nothing.
Mm-hmm. In Germany, it's about 80%, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Wow. The okay. The Germans do a lot much better than we do.
On a lot of things.
Well, I guess they do have less people, too. Dean just told me that. But still. So what do you hope to see next with this program?
I'm hoping to begin establishing like a real enduring, sustainable, scalable program, working with MedCom, working with the BOSS program. I'm now what I believe is in the end stages of establishing this Army-wide program. Maybe in the next year or two, it'll be complete. But I want every soldier every year to be given that education, to be told like, hey, they don't take your bones out when you donate.
Yeah.
Given an easy opportunity to register in a way that improves the Army, like serves that Army's mission, both for leader development opportunities. They're doing these drives, serving their country, tangible examples of those Army values, as well as just we're now more ready if we're deployed and we get exposed to something nuclear, radiological, or chemical that affects your bone marrow or your stem cells. You can get a donor much easier by having more people on the registry. I want to see the Army be the largest source of those bone marrow donor registries each year. 30% of the Army is it more than doubles the current amount of Americans registered each year by BeTheMatch.
Wow.
Yeah. I lost my question, Jeannie. This happens a lot. we've talked about how many people you've registered, what you hope to see next with the program, but what's your ultimate goal?
With the program?
Yeah. If you could like put some, just what do you hope? What do you hope to see? Like no holds bar.
I want to see in the next two years, the Army be that largest source of bone marrow donor registries each year, which literally more than doubles the chances for cancer patients just on a wider pool of available donors. And I want to see that be the same case unchanged, just as effective 10 years from now, 15 years from now. Nothing I've done matters if it just falls apart in a year. It's not enduring. And that's kind of what I have to do now while I have the chances.
Yeah.
Invest all my time in making sure it's sustainable.
But that's what you're doing. You have moved to the division surgeon's office, and you are devoting your time to this program. Mm-hmm. That's how much your leadership believes in it and believes in what you're doing.
Absolutely, which is weird.
And I absolutely believe that there's probably some untapped possibilities that you haven't even looked at for spreading this information across the installations. Like, you're already huge. I mean, you're global. You're in Belgium. So that's amazing in and of itself. But to be able to hit every single installation, I think there, you probably have some untapped possibilities in there. And I think with you working with those who are already involved with the program and putting your heads together, I'm sure you can find those possibilities from, you know, maybe partnering with MWR and advertising in newcomers briefings, things like that. Mm-hmm. These are all great possibilities. You've already done an amazing right. job at spreading this word. And somebody who has like an advertising marketing background, I see there's so much more potential, and I can see you're going to go really, really far
right.
with this program. It's going to be amazing. I'm going to go to this as soon as we get done with this. Yeah. I'm going to bethematch.org and update my information, considering it's probably 20 something years old.
What's your, go ahead.
The global kind of thing, those are my team members that reach out to me and I support them. Most of the people in the leaders I work with in the Army aren't on that list. I'm establishing programs with USASOC, 82nd, 10th Mountain, 1st Cav, 1st Med Brigade, MRCW. I've just got a program fully established with 20th Seaburn. Oh, wow. 2 days ago,
wow.
We signed the outbid. I just went and got back from TDY with them. And yeah, there's a lot of ways to fit it in, but I'm just going to keep networking and keep shoving myself in offices with leaders and putting this in their face and, you know, giving them puppy dog eyes so they can't say no.
I can't wait to interview again in like 2 years and see where we're at with this.
Right. What's your family say? I mean, to take something that people don't talk about very often, but like we said, it means so much to so many people, and so many people are touched by it. What's your family say about what you're doing?
They don't really understand all the in-depth Army part of it.
Oh, sure.
But they really like reading the articles that come out. And my mother died of cancer when I was 4, so they really are proud of this kind of serving. That maybe making that bad reality not so much of a thing for people anymore. You know, maybe if more people on that registry, less people are gonna have that same story.
That's amazing. Yep. Your mom, I'm sure, is very proud of everything that you've accomplished, and you are gonna help so many other people. Whether you know somebody that you've registered actually ends up donating or not, you're still talking about this and having people talk about it
and giving people the possibility of having a chance.
Absolutely. So you had told me a story once about how you almost died doing this.
Oh no. What?
I want you to go back and enlighten Jeannie a little bit. You've put so much of your own sweat in, I'm going to say tears, that you've almost died doing this. So I guess I don't even know what my question is. I just want to know your story again about what you were doing.
How did you almost die? Please tell me.
So this is actually when this actually became like Operation Ring the Bell stopped just being my hobby. And I saw like I could make a division program, make an actual impact beyond just what I do with these two hands. It was in January of last year. I had got an opportunity from a Master Sergeant at William Beaumont Army Medical Center here, the big Army hospital. She was a sergeant there. She reached out to me on Reddit and got me to be able to do a 2-week long drive at the hospital, which I had to figure out how to do from the ground up. And I don't believe in table drives. So, and this is going to be a table drive. And that's where, like you set up a table, you just wait for people to come up to you. I don't believe in those. So what I did was figure out a way to make my table drive work. And that was to, I networked with all the battalions and with my brigade and convinced them to give me volunteers for each day for a 2-week long drive. I had 3 tables set up at all the most important, like population heavy parts of the hospital. I got 3 people on each table, 6-hour shifts. The next group would come in after 6 hours. I was there for 14 hours a day. Managing, and I had them harass every single person who came to the hospital. I don't care what they're here for. I don't care if they're about to go get brain surgery. They're going to get their hands and we'll swab their cheek while they're on the table. Through that, I was able to register 700, which is 3 times more than the previous largest, most successful hospital drive in military history for bone marrow. And the result of that was having to get volunteers every single day, having to walk. I was walking. You could stand at the middle table and see my other 2 tables from it. So they were pretty close to each other. I was walking 13 miles a day in between them.
Wow.
I was averaging like 70 phone calls a day, calling the people on my team, calling random platoon sergeants of these battalions, going, "Give me my fucking volunteer." What do you mean he's not going to make it? Getting those volunteers in, getting my team, and not really sleeping at that point. It was like 3 hours a day because I would finish up work, then have to go home and do all the back end admin stuff, get the things ready for the next day, get up at 3 a.m. so I could be at the hospital by 4:30 to meet the next team, train them for an hour and a half on how to do salesman stuff. Then get kits, all that. Anyway, the stress of that apparently plummeted my immune system. And I'm not really, I guess, eating like once a day while walking 13 miles a day wasn't good for me. So I got a tonsil infection, but I got a really bad tonsil infection, I got a really rare condition of a tonsil infection, which is periodontal tonsillitis. But I also somehow had, and it's usually just up here, I had it my entire throat.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I was sick. I had like 3 days left in my drive. I felt sick on like Wednesday. Like I was like, I just had a sore throat and then I felt really sick by the end. I was like, I'll be fine. I went to bed. I woke up with 105 temperature. Like I couldn't speak. I had to have a friend take me to the ER. It took me like 10 minutes to get to the door because I was just so out of it. And I went to the ER just to get some medicine so I get back to work that day. And they took one look at my throat and they were like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, wow.
I was on a breathing tube an hour later.
What?
While I was awake. They told me they were just going to take my tonsils out and I would be back home in a couple hours. So they said they were going to have to put the breathing tube in while I was awake because my throat was like that. And if they put me to sleep, it would have closed and I would have died. And I was going to die later that day if I hadn't gone when I did because I had so little throat left. I woke up 4 days later with a beard.
Wow.
I was put in a coma for 4 days on a breathing tube.
Wow.
And I lost 17 pounds in 6 days. And the day I got out of the hospital, that's when the CT recognized me. So the second I got out of the hospital,
you were back at it.
Write up that entire 38-page continuity book from scratch and then give it to them and then walk home and like almost pass out like 6 times on the way there.
You are dedicated.
Very dedicated.
To put it together to get my weight back. I was the picture of the CT like at the little award ceremony. I looked like an actual corpse. Wow. It might be the worst picture the Army's ever taken of me.
Wow. Well,
that is amazing.
Like I said, blood, sweat, and tears.
Absolutely.
Well, that's amazing. And like I've said before multiple times in this, what you are doing is incredible. And it's really affecting more than just the Army. It's such a huge impact on everybody. And everybody knows somebody who has had cancer before. So, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to make sure you mention?
I'll always say it's not just Specialist Sutton doing this. It's my team. It's all the people who I work with that are just amazing. And for my shout outs, if you don't mind. Specials Hollander, Sergeant Finn, LT McHale, Staff Sergeant Murphy, Major Meeker, Sergeant First Class Nizal, Sergeant Carolla, as well as the some of those leaders, that like my brigade surgeon, who was like the most important leader and impact I've ever had. I still choke up talking about him. Zachariah Dillingham, give him a promotion, Army. I don't know. And also just my 180 leadership. They've been incredible.
So before we let you go, where can people go to register or to get more information?
They can go to BeTheMatch.com. They can go to Salute to Life if they're DOD, so they can register. You don't need, if you register through Be the Match, you don't need to register again through Salute to Life. It's all the same organization,
okay.
The National Donor Program. It's just Salute to Life is specifically for DOD members because we're government people. We got to have the government take our spit, not some other organization.
All right. Well, Jeannie, do you want to?
No, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about this. I am fascinated, and I'm going to head off and go to Be the Match now.
All right. Well, thank you, Specialist Sutton, again, for taking the time to talk with us. What you're doing is incredible, and I think everyone can agree with that.
Absolutely. 100%.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. It was a pleasure talking with y'all again.
All right.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and you can also find full video episodes of our podcast on YouTube. You can just search for the Force Comm Frontline, and we'll see you next time on the Frontline.